Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. And Kevin, I have an announcement.
Okay, what? Let's hear it.
I just ate a delicious burrito.
I am so glad we are in different cities right now.
Yeah. Also, my back hurts, but we're pushing on into this week's episode, in which we're going to review a few movies, I'm told. Brooklyn's Finest.
Well, there's a monumental thing that's happened with these movies, hasn't there?
Both of them.
Wow. That blows my mind.
Yes. Brooklyn's Finest, which is
Antoine Fuqua.
Fuqua's sequel to Training Day, pretty much. and then Alice in Wonderland, which is the Tim Burton version of Alice in Wonderland.
In other words, Alice in Wonderland on crack.
Yes, and
more LSD than anything else.
Yeah, and then later we're gonna do in our magical third segment, we're gonna do a Fat Guy 5 that I think everyone will like, and then I'm going to beat Kevin up at the end of the show for crappy taste in movies.
I did not agree to that, but there will be a smackdown in the DVD roundup section. I promise you. Stay tuned.
Yes, indeed. But before we get to all that, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can go over to FatGuysTheMovies.com, which is now home to not only Fat Guys the Movies and Fat Guys the Movies the Second Reel, but also the Idiot Boxers.
Yes.
With hosts Meryl Barr and Kevin Carr. I love how that rhymes. That's kind of
Barr and Carr. That's right, man.
And they're talking about television, I guess. Yeah.
Well, the whole reason being is there really isn't there aren't very many definitive podcasts on television. All television is rolled up in a lot of the movie podcasts. Like us, we talk a little bit about it, but we don't have it devoted to it. So it's a bi-weekly show where we talk about, you know, series that are on that we like and we think are cool.
Yeah, so there's that. And then
we have some crossover fans, because Dawn from California is a fan now.
I thought Dawn was my fan.
She's not.
I don't think that's fair.
She doesn't have any respect for you after you just assume that your mom would make you Thanksgiving dinner.
That's silly.
I remember that episode.
That's just silly talk. I think Dawn is my fan, and I would dare her to call in and make it known to you, Kevin Carr, that she is clearly my fan.
Yeah, whatever.
And in order to call in, that number is 614-388-8735. It's on all the time. You can call it and leave a voicemail. You can get us on iTunes. Go over to iTunes and search Fat Guys of the Movies, and you know, we come right up. And you can follow us, review us, all that good stuff. And you can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can also get us on Facebook at just Facebook, and then search Fat Guys of the Movies. And you can get us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is twitter.com/rejects, and Kevin Carr's is twitter.com/KevinCarr.
What?
So there you go. I'm actually going to, while you talk about something, I'm sure, I'm going to look and see if anyone reviewed our show on iTunes last week.
Well, we did get a voicemail, which we'll play in the next segment.
Yes.
Thank you to a certain co-host, another co-host, who's called in.
Yeah, Meryl Barr was nice enough to call. He's calling in every week until someone else calls in.
He's like a guy who has a drunk prom date kind of thing. You know?
Right.
He'll just keep calling.
Right.
But right now, let's
move
on to
the first. Can I say something really quick before we move on?
Yes, absolutely.
We have not had a review on iTunes since December 29th of 2009. Get
with the program,
you know,
people.
What, listeners? I am disappointed in all four of you. What is your problem?
Who gave us that? Now, we had one from our good friend from Stockholm, Sweden, but somehow that didn't go to the American.
Yeah, he needs to try again.
No, he did try again. He sent me like the screen capture of the review, but apparently it didn't propagate to the U.S.
Anyway, the latest review is a glowing review from Jeff Hall, who is a longtime fan. He's also a fan of. And this is weird, because there aren't that many crossover fans to Reject Radio. he's also a fan of Reject Radio. Shows up in the chat room every week.
I hear that Macal from Texas is not a crossover.
Not a fan of Dr. Quilobias, which is kind of funny if you ask me. You know?
Yeah. Well.
Oh boy.
Anywho, should we go on? Should we talk about Brooklyn's Finest now?
Yeah. All right, let's do that.
Brooklyn Finest is three stories of different police officers in Brooklyn that come to a head in one violent night.
They got millions of dollars sitting in office, all drug money. Far be it from me to wag my finger at somebody who's looking out for himself.
What are you doing?
How much longer are you gonna be dodging bullets, man?
These streets got an expiration date on them.
It's just good to know we got some real fam out there, man.
You do this, you got detective first grade.
We're all imperfect creatures. Pray for forgiveness.
I don't want God's forgiveness. I want his help.
I'm going to let you take first crack at it, because it's just so rare for you to have actually seen a movie. Go, my lord.
Well, I saw this at Sundance. Not this year, but last year.
Oh, my. This is everything for you. You're like, oh, I saw it at Sundance. Well, that's all point. You do. You see all your movie at Sundance, and then when they trickle out through the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, that's why I go to Sundance.
Yeah. Actually, I think you go to Sundance for other reasons.
Why?
I'm not going to say them on the air.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, I go to Sundance for the movies, man. Get out of here. Anyway, so what was I going to say about
You're talking about Brooklyn's Finest. You saw it at Sundance and 2 years ago. And at that time, it starred, I think, like Lawrence Fishburne and Pauly Shore.
No. We shot everything. The same movie. And it really is, I mean, if you've seen Training Day, this is really, there's one storyline that involves Richard Gere that is kind of like Training Day, where it's, you know, the old wise cop and the new cop, and, you know, bad things are obviously going to happen.
You know what the thing is? So Richard Gere is, like, so out of place in this movie, because you got, like, Don Cheadle can play bad, and, you know, like,
Ethan Hawke,
he can play, and he's got the accent and everything. And then you got Richard Gere, who just sort of flitters onto screen.
Yeah.
he doesn't seem like the cop 7 days from retirement to me.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a bloated movie. I haven't seen the new cut, so I don't know if...
It's bloated. It's still bloated.
But it gets some good... There's some good moments in it, and there's some, you know, Antoine Fuqua... Get some really kind of gritty action, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of it. I just didn't, I didn't like the fact that it had a little too much story, and it really just kind of lingers in certain parts. So
it's not that I wouldn't say it's that it has too much story. It gets repetitive. There's a whole story where Ethan Hawke's character he's trying to move out of his crappy neighborhood and into a better house, and he's trying to get a down payment for a house, and they've got like five scenes where he's on the phone with the realtor. Saying, oh, you got to get the down payment. I'm like, we've been over this. You know, let's move on. You've established that he's trying to get this house. So that's what it does. It repeats itself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's true.
And there's a whole side story where Don Cheadle plays an undercover cop, and he's in the gangland with Wesley Snipes, who proves even a good-looking man can look like an idiot in cornrows.
Wow.
And they have these whole scenes where they're talking, but it's all this jive slang. I seriously wanted subtitles, like from the movie.
You seriously don't understand jive. You are the worst. I can't even handle you sometimes with your not understanding of jive slang.
That's what it was. There's a whole scene where they're talking on the rooftop, and I lean over to my friend. I'm like, what are they saying? I don't get it.
Kevin Carr.
I needed the nun from Airplane to come translate it for me.
I totally understood all the quote-unquote jive slang. And in fact, I think Don Cheadle was kind of one of the highlights of this movie for me.
Oh, he's good. I mean, he's like good in everything he does. He was even good in like movies like Bullworth and Hotel for Dogs. I mean, he's good in anything.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's a serious actor.
He's a good actor.
Anyway...
The movie does overstay its welcome. It goes on forever, and I hate these movies that they have like multiple storylines that all come to a head and don't make sense when they come to a head.
Well, it kind of makes. I don't know. It just takes too long for them to have to make sense out of it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I say kind of rocks. I enjoyed it enough.
I say it sucks. And I like Antoine Fuqua's stuff, so that's a shame.
All right. Well, time to go to a break. And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies.
What? Yes.
Now that we've reviewed Brooklyn's Finest. Brooklyn's Finest.
Yeah, can I throw out my line? And this is going to be on my, if I actually write a review for this. It's going to be, here it is. Ready? Brilliant sort of quote line. They're going to put this on the poster. If this is Brooklyn's Finest, Brooklyn's screwed.
Oh, jeez.
There's going to be so many of those. Lines already people are like, this is not the Miss Brooklyn's unfinest. Although there's some people who like this movie, which I don't get.
I kind of liked it. I guess I'm one of them.
Yeah, whatever. I just don't think you got it.
What?
I'm taking the Kevin Smith approach. I just don't think you understood the movie, which is why you liked it.
I was going to ask you a question.
We got a voicemail.
What are we doing next? Are we doing the voicemail
next? Let's
do
the voicemail. We got a voicemail from our longtime listener. Meryl Barr, co-host of The Idiot Boxers with me, has left us another voicemail. Does he have anything important to say? I don't know. Let's hear.
Hey, Fick, it's Meryl again. As promised, I am leaving my weekly voicemail until people start calling in with their own. So, not much to say. Clearly, I got shafted hard on the cop-out results. I think I should stop predicting, probably. You can hear all about that on the latest Twilight episode, which Kevin guested on. And also check out the first episode of The Boxes, which premiered earlier this week. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. And I'll next week, I promise, to call in with an actual question that you guys can discuss. Later.
So he got screwed on his cop-out prediction, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about there. What is that?
He said that it was going to make $50 to $70 million domestic. And I'm like, no, it's going to pretty much do Kevin Smith business. It's going to be like $30 to $40
million. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that.
That didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Meryl can get kind of excited. If there's something he believes passionately about, you can make him just get ridiculous. He'll be like, no, this will make $800 million.
I wonder what he predicted for Zach and Miri. He's like, I've seen so much marketing for this movie. It's going to be like $90 million opening.
Well, that's,
when, in fact, Kevin Smith's movies never open well.
Well, I got in an argument with Meryl on Twitter about, not Twitter, it was on Facebook, about, he's like, oh, marketing is all over the place. And I'm like, look, you know what? Marketing didn't get Jennifer's Body or Grindhouse or even Watchmen. Watchmen did like $65 million its opening weekend, but they were predicting $100 million. You know, it was so saturated in the marketplace, but just because you market it doesn't mean people are actually going to go see it. For better or for worse. Watchmen was a great movie. It just wasn't as, you know, but it's not a mainstream movie. So
yeah.
Anywho, let's move on to a definitely a mainstream movie, that one would be
a movie that probably a lot of people are going to go see.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. This would be Alice in Wonderland. Tim Burton reimagines Wonderland in this live-action and CGI sequel to the classic Disney animated film.
There is a place like no place on Earth. Some say to survive it, you need to be as mad as a hatter. Which, luckily, I am.
It's you.
Alice has returned to Wonderland.
Since you've been gone, the Red Queen has taken over all of Wonderland.
Find her!
Help us make the world right again.
Oh, are there?
I'm also, again, going to be magnanimous and let you go first.
Yeah, well, what I don't understand is why you wrote a straightforward description for this movie.
Why I didn't say, like, Tim Burton drops acid all over Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, you're totally in the tank for Disney, man. I always knew it.
Here's the thing.
I always knew it.
I always knew it with you. I get accused of being a Disney shill. But here's the thing. Disney knows its audience. That's the thing. I mean, Hannah Montana the movie was not geared at fanboys, period. It just wasn't. So the hatred that they have for Hannah Montana...
What about normal people like me?
But there's also... It's not geared for you. Are you a 12-year-old girl? I know you act like one sometimes. And if you happen to sit next to you during a horror movie, you would mistake you and then look over and go, that is a hairy 12-year-old girl. But... But no, Disney knows its audience, and there's some exceptions. Like, I hated old dogs. I was very vocal about that. I didn't like – there are movies I don't like that Disney puts out. But for the most part, especially for their big-ticket items, they know their audience. And that's kind of how I review. So that's why a lot of times you'll find me saying, look, if you like this kind of movie, you're going to go see. I did it last week with Cop Out. I hated Cop Out, but I'm like, look, if you love Tracy Morgan, woohoo, knock yourself out. $70 million opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, are you checking email? Is that what you sound distracted?
Yeah, I got totally bored by what you're saying.
Well, go ahead. review the movie. Review Alice.
Here's the thing. Here's kind of the problem that I had. With Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
Is that it's the flattest 3D movie that I've ever seen. Uh-huh. In the sense that it's, sure, it looks quite interesting and it looks cool. And some of the performances are even fun. Maya Wasikowska was good. Helena Bonham Carter was good. Anne Hathaway was a very funny parody of Princess slash Queen. With she spent the whole movie with their arms up.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
Well, that's an inside joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inside joke in the sense that she's played a princess in everything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a funny princess thing. But the movie really doesn't move very well. It doesn't ever gain energy. Mm. And it's kind of slow. And it's kind of... like I said, the story is just flat. There's really no arc to it. You never really kind of feel dragged. You never feel pulled into it, I think. And a lot of it is... some of the dialogue's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Well, that it just feels very uninspired. It just feels like Tim Burton has once again succeeded in making a Tim Burton version of another movie, of another story, and it feels like he just did it to do it and to do something else with Johnny Depp and to let Johnny Depp be crazy, and it really it just doesn't feel like it works in the end. I really just walked out of it not having enjoyed or. Not it. Like I didn't enjoy it. I didn't hate it. I didn't. It happened, and it was, which is really kind of frustrating for a movie that's, you know, in 3D.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a lot of talent goes into it. It should have been much better.
Well, you know, here's my take on Alice in Wonderland. It's a the entire story outside of this movie. I've always been a fan of the Alice in Wonderland stories. I've been a fan of the books. I've been a fan of the original Disney movie because it is so out there and was originally conceived really without much of a story in the first place. I mean, if you go back and you read Through the Looking Glass and Alice in Adventures in Wonderland, these aren't heavy on stories. It's just this girl wandering around going, wow, this is trippy, is a lot of what it is. And if you go back to the original 50s movie, the animated film, it's the same way. She just kind of wanders through Wonderland and then leaves. And that's sort of the essence of the story. And I remember thinking about this before this came out, thinking, I'm not expecting a big story because they never, ever had a big story with Alice in Wonderland. And and I think you're sort of, it's set up in a world in such a way that you can't give too much depth to these characters because then they sort of violate what they stand for in the first place of having no order. So I get that. I like the fact that they made it like a sequel. They just didn't retell it.
They pulled the story from Through the Looking Glass, which was the sequel book.
Yeah, and I like that because it's such a because you're so familiar with her just wandering through initially. But what? And yes, it looks fantastic.
I didn't like that the 3D felt very gimmicky.
We talked about
when we reviewed like Avatar and Coraline and some of the other 3D movies that have come out, and I think Alice in Wonderland represents one of the big problems that you can have is the 3D serves no purpose. And I didn't even feel like there was a lot of depth to Wonderland or to Underland.
Yeah,
and it was just kind of a frustrating overall experience.
See, now here's the thing. I liked it because of what it was. I liked it because I love the little Wonderland world, and I can see where it does have a certain... It does lack something, but I don't necessarily blame Burton for it. I think it does some really cool things. And you're right, some of the dialogue's flat, but you can say that about any of his movies. Dialogue is not his strength.
That's a problem he has as a filmmaker.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still...
Doesn't make it right.
No, that's fine. But I'm just saying, you go in... It's like, if you're going to go into a Michael Bay movie, it's not going to have any story whatsoever. It's just going to be explosions. So, and so this one, it's like a lot of trippy visuals, and it kept my interest. And I like where it went. And I thought it was fantastic to see. I think people are going to eat it up because it's sort of like Avatar. It's this visual experience. It may not have the strongest story, but it's this immersive visual experience and a lot of fun. I took my kids and they loved it. So, I mean, I'm going to give it a rocks.
I'm going to give it a sucks because I think it was not good at all.
Nah.
And I don't think you should take your kids to go see it because it's not that good.
Whatever. So,
there you go.
You're an idiot.
Moving on. I'm an idiot. Time to go to break.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are here talking more about movies. I think now it's time. I think we said enough about Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's clear that you're wrong and I'm right.
Whatever.
And the Alice in Wonderland is not that good, and you want everyone to believe that it is that good, and that's not true.
No, that's not what I said, Mr. Putting words into my mouth. I said it's...
That you like it even though it sucks.
No, it's a good visually compelling piece. It's typical of a Tim Burton movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there you go. If you like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you'll probably like Alice in Wonderland.
Fair enough, I guess.
Okay, see? Fair enough, whatever. Idiot. Whatever. Anyways, let's talk about box office.
I totally just forgot what we were talking about. We're talking about box office.
Let's talk about box office.
Shutter
Island. As we had predicted, Shutter Island came in first, the second week in a row.
And I guess congratulations are in order to Kevin Smith, who had his biggest opening of all time, $18 million.
Here's the thing, and yes, congratulations. It's $18 million is a good opening, but the problem is this is like, I mean, The Dark Knight, or not The Dark Knight, the Batman Begins was the biggest opening of Christopher Nolan's career, but it should have been as big as it was,
mm-hmm.
because it's a freaking Batman movie.
Right.
And his other movie was Memento, which, you know, was a very small little movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Kevin Smith, this is the best for Kevin Smith weekend, but, you know, this movie made less than what Bruce Willis was paid to be in Die Hard for.
Mm-hmm.
Just to put it in perspective.
Yeah.
You know, for a Bruce Willis cop movie, it should have done better.
I agree. It should have done much better, but, you know, I guess they were playing it safe. Also R-rated, which I don't really understand. I would have taken all of the F-words out of that movie, made it a PG-13, and it would have made $12 million more. It would have made $30 million.
I don't understand why
it needed to be an R.
Yeah, but you know what? The top three movies were R-rated movies. Shutter Island, Cop Out, and The Crazies, all rated R.
That's true, but, so, I mean, Avatar, you know, collectively, was PG-13.
Well, but collectively, the top three movies, all R-rated, made what? $56 million?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, February's safe for R-rated movies because it's summertime that has trouble with R-rated movies because you got so many kids out, you know, in the theaters.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting. I don't know. You look at, like, I mean, Die Hard made $33 million. It was a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
I mean, it came out in the summer. This is a stupid comparison. We should really move on.
In the midweek, Avatar was beating Cop Out and just barely under Shutter Island. Interesting with Avatar, went over for $700 million this past weekend, which is phenomenal. But also, it is currently, at least at the time of recording, it is only $6 million away from its non-U.S. revenue beating Titanic's full worldwide gross.
Yeah.
Which is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think it's going to win Best Picture.
Okay, fair enough. Should we predict the Oscars this week?
Do you want to talk? We can talk about that in the third segment. Are we in the third
segment? We're in the third segment.
Oh, my gosh.
Should we be predicting who's going to win?
Well, okay. Do you want to do that real quick? Let's do that before. Well, first, let's talk
who's gonna Alice in Wonderland. Alice in Wonderland's obviously going to win. I think it'll probably pull in about $35 million.
I think it's good for a close to 40. Uh-huh. I mean, I think, and the reason is the only other thing opening against it is Brooklyn's Finest, which I think is going to just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had a cop film last week, you had an R-rated film 2 weeks, and I really think it's just going to disappear. We haven't had sort of like that safer movie, that sort of like, I'm reluctant to call Alice in Wonderland a family movie, but there's,
mm-hmm.
it's going to have a much wider appeal. It's going to hit a larger demographic. So I think that after the last couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
people are, you know, the audience is going to be there. They're ready for it.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And then I think Shutter Island, it'll be Alice in Wonderland, Shutter Island, Brooklyn's Finest, Avatar.
Fair enough.
And Cop Out in the Crazies down there somewhere.
Okay. I agree.
Okay. We can agree on that. Now let's talk the Oscars. Do you want to just do the top... Is there anything... should we just do the top six? You know, the picture, best director, actor, actor, supporting?
Yeah, why not?
Do you want to throw in screenplay at all?
I think... No. No, not okay. really.
I'll just throw it...
Animated movie. We do animated.
Quentin Tarantino is going to win for best original screenplay. I just think that the
and I think the Academy and I wouldn't be surprised if In the Loop wins for best adapted.
I would love to see that win.
Yeah,
because that was a fantastic script. Mm-hmm. But animated movie, what do you think is going to win?
I think Up is going to win. I think it's pretty. Yeah. It's pretty much a lock at this point.
I would find it hard to believe that Up would be nominated for one of the 10 best pictures as the only one, and then wouldn't win best animated film.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't wash, yeah. You know. But I still think Up is so hard to beat. But it's a fantastic group of animated films, except for I'm railing against Secret of the Kells because how the hell did that even get nominated? Because no one saw it except it had that 1 week run.
It's very good. I've seen it. I have a screener here. And it's very good.
Yeah, but I mean, how does it get nominated if it runs for a week? Who makes these nominations? This to me is, that's just, I don't know. I hate that when it's like, oh, this movie that's not even opening until Oscar weekend in New York is going to get so.
It's screw curious. The Secret of Kells. I guess it's curious.
Anyways,
so,
who do you think is going to win best? Well, let's do the actor categories: best actor and best supporting actor. Pretty much Christoph Waltz has got it wrapped up for Best Supporting.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he didn't even have to die of a drug overdose, and he has it wrapped up.
That's classic Kevin Carr.
Ooh. Yeah, you know what's the difference between a Heath Ledger joke and Heath Ledger? The Heath Ledger jokes get old. Oh, have I offended anyone too soon? It's been 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow. All right,
actor supporting role is going to be, what's his name, that guy?
Christoph Waltz.
Leading actor, I feel like it's going to be Jeff Bridges this year.
I think it has to be. I'd love to see Jeremy Renner win, simply because he's the only one in that list that isn't doing his I'm going for an Oscar moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, because like Colin Firth for Single Man, that's totally an Oscar grab. So is Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges. And you know, but I mean, Jeremy Renner's, I think his role in The Hurt Locker was the only one that he just... Somebody just took the role and just did a really good job.
Yeah, definitely. So,
I don't think Jeremy Renner took the role thinking, I'm going to win an Oscar for this one.
Right. And I think that's kind of the thing behind The Hurt Locker is that it's very kind of an unassuming movie overall. So, I'd like to see Renner win, but I think Jeff Bridges is going to win. All
right. Supporting actress.
See, this one is another easy one. I think Monique. I just watched Precious again the other night, and she is the villain of the year. You know, she just kind of cuts right through that movie.
She is the Darth Vader of ghetto movies, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. I guess. No, I mean she just emotionally kind of cuts through the movie. She's not the heart and soul of the movie. It's Gabrielle Sidibe is the heart and soul of that movie, but she really cuts through it in a very nasty way, and then at the end in a very emotional way. So,
well, and I think it's very no one expected that from Monique. I mean, she's a comedian.
This is true.
She
transformative type.
Yeah, her last big movie was Fat Girls. You know, I mean, this is a but no, I think she really threw down for that. So yeah, I think she's gonna win. I think that's pretty sewn up. Best actress.
Best actress. I think it's gonna be Sandra Bullock.
Here's the thing.
If not, then Meryl Streep.
Actually, if there's going to be an upset, there's always an upset. I'm even though I haven't seen it, I'm saying the upset is going to be Carey Mulligan for An Education.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Carey Mulligan wins it because she is kind of the underdog story of the year. Even though everybody saw this movie at Sundance last year, thought it was fantastic. And was calling for her to get nominated for an Oscar. But, you know, she's the young gun, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and there's always the four acting categories. You never get all four going exactly what everyone predicts. There's always like I didn't expect that. Mm-hmm. And the other three, I think, are too sewn up. I think if there's anything that comes out of nowhere. Although I wouldn't be surprised if Sandra Bullock got it because I think the Academy just is dying to give her an Oscar, even after All About Steve.
Well, and I think Sandra Bullock, it's interesting, is she's one of the only ones on this list that her performance is much better than the movie she's in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I think
that's
she does
one
a good
of the things that really always kind of helps the movie stand out, or helps the performance stand out. Is she's? I mean, the movie's good, but she's great in it. You know.
Yeah, I think, but there is a certain Julia Roberts getting nominated for Pretty Woman kind of vibe to this, where it's just like, we're just putting this because it made $260 million, you know?
I don't think it's that. I think it's more of a Sandra Bullock's been working, you know, for a long time, and she's been around, and this is kind of her first role that has been worthy of a nomination, so...
Right. You didn't think... You didn't think Demolition Man was worthy of an Oscar?
Close, but not quite.
Okay. All right, now the big guns. Director. Okay. Do you want a director and Best Picture separately? I'd like to do them separately.
Well, yeah, I mean, they could be different.
Who do you think?
I think Catherine Bigelow is going to win Best Director, no matter what film wins Best Picture.
Yeah, I think she, for two reasons. First of all, it's been the third time a woman's been nominated, and Hollywood loves to be progressive. I think they want to give it to her. And this is one that really, it's not a token nomination. I mean, she really deserves the nomination, unlike Barbara Streisand for Prince of Tides 20 years ago. She wasn't going to win that. But I really think that Catherine Bigelow deserves it. And also, James Cameron came out and made that statement where he's like, oh, I hope she wins Best Director, which is kind of his way of throwing support and sort of like saying to the Academy, you have my permission to not vote for me in this category, vote for my ex-wife.
Well, I think she just deserves it. And I think I think I said this on Reject Radio last week, but the Academy loves the opportunity to make history. Especially when history can be made and their consciences can be clear. And this is one of those times where they can do it to make history and not feel like they're giving someone an award and passing over someone. Because, I mean, of all the nominees, Catherine Bigelow absolutely deserves it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think that's the interesting thing. And that's the Academy, if nothing else, if any body of voters is relatively predictable, it's them. So,
yeah.
I think she's going to win it.
Okay, now big guns. What do you think is going to happen in Best Picture?
Well, let me tell you what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see District 9 win, but that's not going to happen.
I'd also like a blowjob from Jessica Alba.
I really feel like it's going to go one of two ways this year. Either Avatar is going to sweep all of the technical awards, and it's going to win Best Picture,
Do you need some coffee before?
Or there are going to be upsets all over the place, and something like The Hurt Locker or Inglourious Basterds is going to win. Or you want my really bold prediction?
Okay, bold prediction.
I could say a fourth movie. I think Precious is going to win.
I don't think. Yeah, that's nice and fine and dandy. I really don't think it's going to win.
Okay, that's just my bold prediction. I mean, if I'm wrong, The Hurt Locker will probably win.
Yeah. I've never thought Avatar was going to win Best Picture. I love the movie, made my top 10. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture for a couple reasons. First of all, I think people are tired of it. Mm-hmm. I think people are tired of hearing about Avatar. Okay, it's at $700 million. Okay, fine, it made money. It's no longer. It's not the phenomenon. Whereas like Titanic, it was in that crest. It hadn't made all of its records yet when Titanic was winning the Academy Awards. Plus, it's not as good as, you know, it's not a ubiquitously good movie. It was fun, but it doesn't have any acting Oscars, doesn't have any writing Oscar nominations. Mm. I've been saying for a long time the Hurt Locker is going to win. I don't think, and I stand by that. I think the Hurt Locker is going to win Best Picture. I don't think Lockergate's going to have much of an impact on it because
the cheating thing or the
inappropriate. Yeah, for those who don't know what it was, is one of the producers of The Hurt Locker was sending out emails to Academy voters saying, "Hey, vote for our movie, not Avatar, because it's way too popular."
It wasn't even that bold. It was more of a, you know, we did. He sent an email and it said, I think this is closer to the direct quote, is like, "We didn't need $500 million to make our movie." And he was clearly referencing Avatar. Like he didn't even say Avatar directly.
No, he said the big blockbuster,
So I mean, it was kind of this.
I think that people got those emails. It's not going to affect them either way. They're not going to vote based on that email. It became a news story, but it kind of became a news story late enough that.
Well, all the votes for a while, so it doesn't
matter. Most of the votes have been in, yeah. So if it were to have any effect, it would cancel out votes for both of them. Because I think people don't want to bow to that, but they also don't want to not doubt of that. But I still think Hurt Locker is going to win, and if it's not Hurt Locker, it's Inglourious Basterds. I just don't think Avatar is going to win Best Picture. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would be surprised if Avatar won, to be honest with you. I mean, because obviously Precious is going to win, since I predicted it.
Whatever. Anyways, move on to the Fat Guy 5.
Yeah, the Fat Guy 5, this is going to be a fun one. So yes. We talked about Tim Burton earlier. We talked about Alice in Wonderland and how Alice in Wonderland is nothing more than just the Tim Burton version of Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. It's brilliant. I can't believe... Can we put that on a poster? Tim Burton's version of Alice in Wonderland in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. Anyway, so we thought about five tales that Tim Burton should Tim Burtonize, which means it'll be darker, scarier, weirder. I mean, he's just... So basically, these are the stories that we want Tim Burton to sit down, drop some acid, and figure out what he's going to do with. Because it's clear, I think, at this point that he can't do anything else and has no intention of doing anything else.
He did Big Fish.
He's just
going to
keep making his movies, you know?
Wow.
They're all look the same and feel the same.
This from the guy who thought that Transformers 2 was awesome.
I did not say that Transformers 2 was awesome. I dare you to go back. I dare you to go back and listen to my level-headed review of Transformers 2.
I saw your tweets.
I can't believe you bring that up. Like, every time I'm clearly right. This is
the love guru?
Listeners, this is how you know that I'm right and Kevin is wrong. He brings up Transformers 2 or the love guru because there's nothing else.
Those are your glistening jewels of colossal ignorance.
The merits of the movie. We just have these two big quote unquote mistakes that have to be continuing, that he has to continue to bring up when I'm clearly right, which is
whatever
going on here.
All right, let's move on. What
so the five tales we'd like Tim Burton to do. The first one's Candyland. This one was
that
yours.
Would be awesome.
And yes, Tim Burton's Candyland would actually be kind of cool. So
it would be really cool with Plumpy, the gumdrop creature, and Lord Licorice and King Candy. That would be just be terrifying.
Yeah, I could.
Wake up, man. Jesus,
I
it's
see.
Like 5
I mean,
in the afternoon.
This show's running
kind of
long. This way.
Whatever.
But no, I could see that testing? Working. What's the next one?
All right. Pinocchio. Because Pinocchio is kind of freaky anyways. I mean, it's a freaking whale eats these kids. And then they take these kids and they send them to an island and make them they give them drugs and booze and cigars. And then they turn them into donkey slaves.
Yeah.
This is tailor-made for Tim Burton, and it's a Disney movie too. Yeah. So there you go.
Also, Snow White is our next one because that one already to me is kind of dark.
Well, the whole cut out her heart. And, I mean, wow.
Then the creepy dwarves.
Oh yeah.
You know that could work. Tim Burton would have a little fun with that. He could have what's his name, the guy who played Tweedledee and Tweedledum, who's hilarious. Probably one of the only good things about that movie.
Play all seven dwarves.
He could play all seven dwarves. That'd be funny.
Deep Roy play all seven dwarves.
Fair enough. Yeah. Next.
You want to do the next one?
I'll do the next one. Yeah, Three Little Pigs. I'd love to see. Awesome. I just think that's yet another like subtly dark story.
Uh-huh.
That very much like Edward Scissorhands, in which the Three Little Pigs are mysterious characters that someone is investigating, and then a wolf comes and blows their house down.
Yeah, well, no, and then falls down and gets boiled alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that'd be a cool shot. Done all in CG, I'm sure.
Of course. And then the other one, this is, of course, on everyone's top of their mind as being a movie that needs to be remade by Tim Burton, Ernest Goes to Camp. And you'd have Johnny Depp play Ernest because, you know, R.I.P. Jim Varney.
R.I.P. indeed.
Yeah, so, yeah, the entire Ernest series, Ernest Goes to Jail, would be a very different movie under the hands of Tim Burton.
I think Ernest Goes to Jail would be a very different movie in your mind.
Well, yeah, it also starred Terry Crews as his prison bitch.
Yeah. So.
On that note.
Yeah.
Let's go to break.
Okay. And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yeah.
We've successfully talked around Alice in Wonderland for the entire show. And we also reviewed Brooklyn's Finest, I guess.
Okay, so let's get to something that we're going to fight more about.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Well, something that you're going to continue to be wrong about.
Whatever.
I guess.
Good Lord, just move on.
We are moving into the epic DVD roundup. Really? Wow.
That's the best I can muster today.
I only have two picks this week, Cold Souls is the movie with Paul Giamatti where he gets a new soul. Mm-hmm. It's very good. Okay. It's very good. Mm-hmm. And the Clash of the Titans, the original Clash of the Titans, which I have seen for the first time as of this week.
You never saw it as a kid?
Well, you were a little young. A lot of fun. No, I mean, I wasn't really a kid back. It was made 2 years before I was born.
Whatever.
So,
you should have worked harder to go see it.
Okay. When I was not alive. Right. Anyway, so those are my two. Clash of Titans, I think, looks good on Blu-ray. It's an interesting mix because that film, it was made in that, like, just right time where it was still stop motion, so you could tell that certain things are not right about it, you know?
No, it was at the heyday of stop motion. They didn't even come up with digital effects for years after that.
Yeah, so...
That was the top of the line back then.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't even...
So,
like,
and I think you can...
Up.
I mean, you can see a lot of the effect elements in there that are kind of problematic, but I think... Yeah, with the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray is so clear that you can see the separation of the stop motion and the live action.
That's the way it was back then.
It looks silly, but I'm sure it looked the same way on the big screen.
I hate to tell you, this is how they made movies back then, and it looked awesome.
But it was good. It's good on Blu-ray.
Okay.
I would recommend.
I'm going to rip through a couple of these. I got the BBC's has an Alice in Wonderland. If you didn't like the Tim Burton version, you can go watch the old BBC version from the 60s with Peter Sellers. That just got released. There's also Bitch Slap, which wasn't that great of a movie, but if you go
in... It was
really
kind of a disappointment.
If you go in knowing it was kind of false advertising.
Yeah,
if you go in knowing there's not going to be gratuitous nudity, but just fighting and violence, it's okay. It looks actually pretty good, only half of it's done in green screen. Yeah. But, I mean, really, they could have done with some more breasts.
They could have gone all out. I mean, yeah. Wasn't the movie an R anyway?
Yeah, well, the DVD's rated... it's unrated, and there's like one very brief breast scene, and it's not even with the star.
Yeah,
one of the stars was naked in another
just,
movie.
Do some nudity.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my big complaint. But I mean, once you know that going in, it's okay. It's not great, but it's okay. There's also Where the Wild Things Are. That's out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's in a DVD,
a good movie.
DVD Blu-ray combo pack, which is actually pretty cool. And the Blu-ray has another short with... that of Maurice Sendak and a whole bunch of like video diaries, which are kind of cute. There's also Tell Them Anything You Want, which is a documentary about that. That's not with the Blu-ray, but it also comes. That's also out this week.
The Maurice Sendak documentary.
Yes. And then Ponyo, which is the Hayao.
Very good movie.
Miyazaki. Yeah. And, that's a fantastic movie. It should have been nominated for an Academy Award over The Secret of the Kells, but there we go. And then there's a Studio Ghibli, which is the Japanese...
You haven't even
seen
Secret of Kells.
I'm railing against it. I haven't had a chance to.
Railing against the movie you haven't seen.
They've released
a bunch.
They've released three Studio Ghibli films, My Neighbor Totoro, Kiki's Delivery Service, and Castle in the Sky. So if you want to see some more of Miyazaki's work, check these out.
Actually, I'm doing that. I'm doing a For Science article.
Oh, okay.
About those movies.
You're watching them all straight?
For next week, I'm watching them all. I did it already.
I love Studio Ghibli stuff. It's such quality, and it's so different than what you're going to get
insane.
In America.
It's insane.
Yeah. And then the one that I want to give as a recommendation, this is a full-on recommendation. It's going to cause a bit of a smackdown, is Gentleman Broncos, which is Jared Hess's follow-up to Nacho Libre, which was his follow-up to Napoleon Dynamite, which has gotten a hatchet job in the... I mean, reviewers around the universe. I mean, reviewers on Alpha Centauri hated this movie.
Yep.
I saw it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really kind of funny.
Let me put it to you this way. Think about all the things that you don't like about Jared Hess's movies. Nacho Libre, there were some bad things. I mean, I enjoyed both Nacho Libre and Napoleon Dynamite.
See,
think about the worst possible things about those movies... This is just that for like 2 hours.
It's
awful. It's terrible. It's an abomination. And the fact that you like this made me not even want to do the show this week.
I know you were so mad.
You told me this couldn't be the stinker, and I almost was like, I don't even want to do the show.
See,
how bad this movie is.
But then I said I was going to call you Neil Ines, or Neil Anus for through the whole movie, which is a joke based on Gentleman Broncos, basically saying you can take any name put anus, mm-hmm. unus, or inus at the end, and it sounds more sci-fi. The reason
well,
this
you
is part of the
call
reason,
this movie Gentleman Broncanus.
You could
and have it be good.
Well,
because it's not good.
Gentleman Bronco. Part of the reason I like the movie is I know people like all the different characters. I mean, everyone. I'm like, oh, that person's like so and so, so I can relate to some of these characters.
You,
as
you
pathetic.
Must live in a parallel universe.
I do. I do. It's called Kevin
no
Anus
one
Land.
Is like this. It's called Kevanus. And I think with that, I think that's the. I have nothing to say beyond that.
I like
you live in Kevanus.
Gentleman Bronco, I think got a bad rap. I thought it was. I thought
please
it was
do not buy this.
More
movie.
Clever. It was very
please,
funny.
I beg you, for listeners of this show, do not buy, rent. See, if you buy it, burn it.
Whatever.
It's that bad.
Let's wrap up. Review wrap up. We've got. Oh, The Sinker is the Dog
Sinker
Whisperer season 4.
Is Gentleman Broncos?
No.
And The Dog Whisperer.
Whatever. Okay. Review wrap up. Alice in Wonderland. I said it rocked. You said.
I said it sucked.
Just because you want to be different than me. Brooklyn Finest.
It has nothing to do with it. It's just a bad movie.
I said it sucked. And for some strange reason, you said it kind of rocks, which.
Because it's kind of a good movie.
Makes you suspect for this whole show. So, you know.
Next week, we've got Green Zone. She's Out of My League. Remember Me and Our Family
Robert
Wedding. I cannot wait. In the meantime, get us over at thatguysinthemovies.com. I'm going to go beat up Kevin Carr now, virtually.